is a production of Cornell University.
All right, the time is now 4:45 p.m. We are calling the May 1st SA meeting to order. All right. After this.
I don't care even if
it's a fucking time. Okay. All right. Alicon. Here. Valley.
Here.
Batista.
Here.
Vendari. Block.
Is this really my last Thursday meeting?
Oh. Last Thursday meeting, yes. If you have one tomorrow, be not deceived. Bonani.
He was here a minute ago.
Unexcused. Oh.
Oh, he's here. Okay. Chen. Drucker.
Unexcused.
Gademski. Harris.
Here.
Henderson.
Here.
Hittinger. Hudson.
Here.
Jimenez.
Unexcused.
Lou.
Here.
Lukashevich.
Here.
Lutzik. Ma. Maletti.
Unexcused.
Smith, well, that's me. Stefanko. Talbot.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Tulsi.
Here.
Vasco.
Here.
Warshaw.
Here.
Zal.
Unexcused.
Okay, I should have counted. 1, 2, 3, 4. Can you give that back to Noah, please? 23 is the total voting number of voting members here today. First order on the business is approval of the minutes. Side conversations need to stop now. Approval of the minutes. There's, oh, sorry, the minutes actually weren't sent. There are no minutes. We're going to move on. Sorry. Next portion is open microphone, EVP ballot.
If there's anyone in the audience today who's not currently on our agenda but would like to address the assembly, please come forward at this time.
Name and year.
And I really appreciate you guys putting it out. It's a fun to speak to a project, and I think it's worth it to provide good evidence to what we need that you present to you guys at some point. As far as I know, just fill it out and turn it to me at the end of the meeting.
Could you say your name and year for the record?
Mark Manson, last 2 minutes.
Thanks.
No problem.
Is there anyone else? Seeing none, open microphone is now closed.
Great. Moving on to announcements and reports. Up first is the State Act Update, VP Tulsi. No report. Appropriations Committee Update, VP Block.
Appropriations Committee had our last meeting this Monday, and I just wanted to say how honestly thankful I am for AFSCOM this year. We did an enormous amount, both with setting the student activity fee or matching that appendix fee with the infrastructure. I think we did an enormous amount of infrastructure funding. We've done an enormous amount of things. Very proud to work with all of you guys. As a separate announcement, Adam Gitlin, myself, Weinberg, a few others are going to be planning an SA reunion of sorts in New York City for this summer. All of you will be invited, as will be following SA back from 2007, 2006, something like that. So it should be pretty fun. Look on the, be on the lookout for that. The Cornell Sun typically has a reunion, and since we're normally better than them in all aspects other than a reunion, we still have time to kind of take over in that respect. So I hope to see a lot of you guys there on tentative date in June 13th, which is a Friday.
Next, Communications Committee Update, VP Harris.
So this is going to be an action in the national spotlight. We've had a great semester in terms of organization that we've been able to recognize and honor. But this week is definitely very special to that day. We we are recognizing the 66 Center for Intercultural Dialogue and Business Spotlight. We commend our efforts to produce impactful events in Bridge and Bread, the second annual Freedom Stage, in order to bridge gaps and create dialogue within Cornell's other student body. We look forward to continuing your initiatives in the future, and thank you for your continuous efforts to unite our students. Please stand for some recognition.
So if you want to say a few words, please.
I would, and thank you. On behalf of the staff of 626 and all the students that work with us, my colleagues here, this is Mary Lucretta to my right, and Andrew Martinez, we'd like to thank you for this recognition and this honor. As you know, we enjoy working very closely with the students, right? And as we move into 2014, 2015, we are going to work on greater alignment so that we can work even more closely with you. I sit here and think about United Student Body and how we have worked with you on that initiative. And as I said to Ross Dippin, that these initiatives happen not overnight, but over time. And that the more we align ourselves for a sustained initiative, then the greater chance we have of listening many more students and including in our initiatives. We really appreciate this acknowledgement, and we hope to continue to work with you. Would my colleagues like to say a few words? No? Again, thank you. Thank you very much. So I'd like to say thank you.
I have to tell you on a personal note how very grateful and thankful I am for all the help that you've extended to me over the past few years that I've known you, from the late night text messages and all that, just being a sturdy support system for me and helping us with these initiatives. I think a lot of the work that you've done, a lot of the collaboration that we've done, it actually goes unrecognized by a lot of the members. They don't actually get to see it all. But I do sincerely appreciate Mary Lee for all the bookings and aggravation I've caused you. And then Andrew for, of course, being there for Alana during all these discussions, which I think has been incredibly helpful this year, especially now seeing a very strong advisor there too. And I just appreciate everything that you've been doing.
We plan to expand Breaking Bread next year. And if you want to spend part of your summer thinking about what organizations, what groups would benefit from a facilitated dialogue for greater and deeper understanding, we will entertain those thoughts when you get back. Of course, you know, it's in the community.
I say, well, you know, I'll still be working here, though. I'm not going anywhere.
I can say personally that I have enjoyed working with all of you along the Student Assembly, and I will continue to work with you next year. So thank you.
Thank you so much again. Thanks again. Those of you who have not yet made the trek down to 66 Thurston, get into that building immediately. Thank you. All right. Next is a Community Life Committee update. Reference to Fanko.
So we're going to make a presentation. We looked over the guest resolutions for integration of NASA, as well as over the EPAC contract resolution. We also spent a significant amount of time helping kind of our folks from here and just to do a great job of the role. And really excited to see a lot of the room.
Okay. Next is a SISH announcement from Rep. Valletti. Is he not here?
Hey guys. So, due to some of the ones that I've done thus far, I spoke to someone in the office, and he's willing to find a cost, energy cost cutting issue on campus. So, me personally, this is my time to come to work on this. We're going to research what happens in Hamilton County and how we can solve it. If you personally or your institution are interested, please reach out to me. I'll get you guys to meet up.
perspective. All right. So right before Susan Murphy or DQ Murphy gets here, I'm just going to remind everyone that we do have a meeting tomorrow at 5 p.m. in Physical Sciences 401. At that meeting, we will be voting on and finishing up anything that we do not actually get to today. It is important that you all are there, because if we do not have a quorum, then we cannot vote on these things, and then things like rules don't get passed, and that would not be good. So please get me to that meeting. Do not be late, so we can keep it moving. And then the faster we get there, everybody can go home and enjoy their Friday, right?
Work can break one out.
So much happiness. All right. Yeah, we don't
have. We're missing.
Oh, check your agenda package. Are people missing?
We're missing 83 and missing 79. We're missing everything.
Gina, I think you're missing.
Resolution.
We only have 83 and 81, I'm sorry. 83 and 81.
I'm missing 79, 80, 82, 85.
You're missing 79, 80.
80.
No, you got those last
three. The things you got, like, you should have got.
It's all new business. We didn't get them last
week. I always have like three different things in front of me.
The essays. Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, we're missing everything.
Sorry for the confusion. Hold on. I think we're missing all new business.
So none of the new business.
81.
Well,
we have Alana.
Yeah.
All right. So while we figure that out, what we do have in the agenda is Alana's changes. In R81.
We've got to
be
the picture of the day.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't even. Okay, so we do have 73, 76, and 83. All right. So
from last week.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody has everything from last week, correct? Great. So we're going to go right on into. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. So we're going to go into business of the day while we're waiting on Susan Murphy to get here. So R73 changes, changing the SAP Commissioner cap to address increasing budget requests sponsored.
We're doing
SFC,
right?
Yes, right now.
73, one from
last. This is now 24, so that's smaller.
Yeah. Go for it.
Unless there are any objections, I call the question.
There's been a call to question. R75, it has been seconded. Is there any dissent? I'm sorry, R73. I keep doing that. Is there any dissent?
No.
Seeing none.
I call for unanimous consent.
There's been a call for unanimous consent. Any dissent to that? Seeing none, R73 is adopted by unanimous consent. At this time, VC Susan Murphy has entered. sorry, no. Okay. Well, we got through one thing. So... No, he's good. You're right on time. We were just, it was a little filler in the intro. Yeah. All right, so we welcome you. I know this is, wasn't your originally scheduled visit. Had a little hiccup there, but you are now here, and so we can address the questions that were posed last week. Certainly, you don't have to do the topic about the presidential transition and such because, well, yeah. unless you want to announce any plans that you might have, and you're running for anything that we need to know about, we need to know now. Questions on the Presidential Search Committee or how that's been going? Mm-hmm. Oh, Gina.
Oh, of the right.
in the mail already, but Danny O'Toole will be the next student on Schedule C. She was a grad student. She's actually the first professional grad student, the professional student that served as a trustee, and the first year professional student for so she has a unique always, and thank you all for the others.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to Annie O'Toole, who's not here.
So I'm going to be a historian here, and in the spirit of the Sunday Amendment, when Julie Crotty was elected to the trustee before we had separate undergrad and grad, she had been an undergraduate here, but when she was elected, I believe she was elected while she was doing her law MBA. So we'll have to check our history.
Contact Corey Earl, he's our executive architect.
And Andy is a law student. And we're cool. Okay, so seeing no questions on that, I am operating off the questions that he received and that the President Corbin sent to me for the earlier speaker. I'll try to touch on those a little bit and then if there's time available and there's other issues, you would be able to bring that to you.
Sure.
So the second question had to deal with the TCAT and the town gown, how implementing TCAT privilege changes affect future students and impact some of the sustainability goals, what happens if the proposed TCAT changes don't pass the U.S. anyway, if I could just go right to the second question.
Yeah.
Will the cost be dependent on students' goals for quantum weighted contribution, and are there any plans for addressing the graduate housing shortage or proposals that could impact the LLC economy? So, with the UA passing of a resolution that is different than what the original resolution, that has now been submitted to the Department of Justice and is going forward for consideration. And I think it's fair to say it's not clear to me exactly what it looks like. It could range from everything from the administration sticking with what we believe was the original proposal, and so as I encourage you that we disagree with you, and we're going to stick with the renewal path, to keeping the path of maybe upping the price of the Omni ride as a way of covering the deficit, to saying to Vice President Long, do you really want to have that in your reserves, I don't know, organization's financial situation, to TCAT, we're not going to give any more money. We're generating a lot of ridership, which generates revenue for you, and this is what we do. I think those and others are probably why we'll be in front of the president. Coming out of the situation of last week, I know that the president intends to engage in more super dialogue, and he may actually be thinking about this before we go. So I don't know what the answer will be. Gina, you can remind me, what's our time frame?
30 days.
So we have 30 days in which we will respond. And, I think if this quote goes to students, it would go in the form of an increased cost to Omnibuy. So it's not going to be a requirement on students. It's not going to be a transportation surcharge showing up on the bill. Right now, students, as you know, you can buy an Omnibuy pass for, I think it's $200. Which is much less than if you were to buy each ride by the time you put the best to buy a package deal and get it to a reduced price. If there was some increase in that price, that would generate more revenue, so you could lose more sheets. And so that's probably what we need to calculate. So it's a work in progress.
And essentially, that would be. Just to clarify for everybody, the Omni Ride Pass itself actually costs $600. We get it for $200.
That's correct.
It's subsidized, so we'd essentially be
reducing the amount of subsidy, but still maintaining the difference in subsidy of what a community would need to pay to buy an Omni Ride Pass. So, I think the numbers, if you all are real, and it's just not clear what the single alternative evidence even by the way. What happened in the UA today, I think, represents what that way the administration has to look at all those alternatives to figure out what the deal is. Do we stick right with what the UA resolution is to that, but the void of the community for
different? Are there any other questions on the TCAT? Because I know there are a few people sent that in, so I don't know if everything was addressed for you all. And that includes the community members also, sorry. Just to be clear. Good? Yeah.
I just have a question. I'm an IR, so I'm going to take you to the way you I wanted to know if we cut the taxes or if there any changes in the amount of workers who have jobs driving buses?
I don't know if their staff has long enough that is to give you an informed answer. I would think not, because most of the students are taking advantage of the bus on the low locker routes anyway. So what drives the staff, as I understand it, is the impact is the number of routes that we have and how many of them have on the routes. So two things to that. One is what would be the impact of ridership by eliminating the free pass? I don't think we know that for sure, but you could model some assumptions. I don't think that would cause there to need to be a reduction in the number of routes that we serve. Now, the other thing that could cause there to be a reduction in staffing is that the TCAT can't meet the budget. And so part of the issue, and again, I don't know how the TCAT works, I can't tell you that I know this perfectly, but I think there are two issues that are driving the demand for Cornell to get up to the dollar or rise. One is TCAT itself looking at its overall budget. I don't think they are in a deficit of $500,000 per se, but they have a tight budget on how they need that to meet the staffing needs. The second is the partnership / national pension between the city and county and the universities. And so when that partnership was first defined, that's where it was, if you will, the equivalent of a dollar or a rise. The reason we're at 86 cents a ride is because so many first year students are riding, quote, for free. And so it's driven the demand much higher than we would have projected the demand to be. And when you look at the money we're paying, that's where the money we're paying by, if you will, inflated ridership calculates to be 86 cents. So I know from the protesters today, a lot of the concern was if we eliminate the free cash, we're going to cause the loss of jobs. TCAT, I have not heard that from the TCAT board. Your best information on that, though, would be from Vice President Tom. He is the chair of the TCAT board, and in his budget, that the payment of Cornell TCAT fits with the transportation budget. So you could, as somebody asking that question, if you would be the best person.
That's good. Could you move? I'm sorry. No? Did you? No? All right. You can go ahead.
So the issue of graduate housing and proposals that could be exactly available to have for undergraduates. At this stage, we have no intent of reducing undergraduate housing where there that demand is being met with graduate housing. What might cause us to do that is if we saw undergraduates voting with their feet and not filling the bed. I think Skylark comes to mind as a place that is not the favorite residence hall for all of the graduates. Might we, if we're not giving ourselves the capacity we need, what might we open that to graduate students and undergraduate both as a way of opening up some opportunities? I think we would, if the demand to fill the housing of the undergraduate students freshman sophomores, transfers, and a number of juniors and seniors who want to stay on campus. But that demand is helping us to have vacancy. How do we gain vacancy? That's lost revenue. We might look at it. I don't foresee a taking away that undergraduates are currently filling. So we ended up, for example, at the end of the housing lottery with more empty beds this year than we had last year. Now, part of that is we had more beds to offer because we taking on what used to be the ACO maternity house, incorporating that as part of the West Campus housing, and we have paired McGraw Place with the West Campus system, which may make that look a bit more attractive. Or juniors and seniors, because they now come back to sophomores, which is not liking what's left after the sophomores go in, and so they're going to their feet, and going on campus, whereas the juniors and seniors had first choice, albeit with a limited number of beds. Sophomores took whatever they had because they wanted to be on campus. So the issue of rapid housing is that it remains a pressing issue for us. We don't have a good solution to it. We were looking to do a partnership with an outside firm, recognizing we can't take on the bandwidth given the obligations to, if you think about the replacement of the equipment, our balance sheet is costing us to have to rethink that. I'm hoping that our balance sheet continues to get healthy and can go back at a what some places the public university would call a public-private partnership, we would call a private-private partnership. Could we lease the land to a private developer who would build something that would be distributed back into graduate housing in replacement of what Maplewood is? And right now, the only way we could do that is if we had access to the computer whatsoever. We can't influence and get it, it could be the non-institutional strategy, because that means putting the university in charge, that gets our balance sheet. But that discussion is quite
open. Right. Yeah, I think one of the discussions that came from this assembly and then the UA campus welfare committee, I'm going to say, hopefully I didn't get that wrong, was if, since Maplewood is in the condition that it's in, and there is this overall housing shortage in Ithaca in general, most undergrads, well, not the, a large percentage of undergraduates who are living off campus do live in the College Town area. And if graduate students coming in now understand the condition that Maplewood is in and feel that that is not the appropriate place for them to live, they would naturally start migrating into what's traditionally student housing, but is traditionally undergraduate housing. And to that end, undergrads might start feeling the push out. The competition is going to go up, essentially, which is already hard enough. And I think that was where that concern was coming in.
The one piece I would add in that I don't pretend to know all the right people, but when John Novar commissioned this project, he then added 1,000 beds in college.
Oh, good.
So now they're at a price point that for a number of our graduate students we know is optimal, and even some of our undergrads may not be optimal. But I think he's still trying to figure out the exact price point, and he filled out the full complement. And I think with the new zoning regulations that the city has just passed, I think we're going to see some increased development in college quickly. So the supply and demand issue is a very real one. How much we can help with our own property, how much will happen to the potential upgrade of college towns to be determined.
Fantastic. Yep.
So then the third question, which is our shared work on MGLD and campus climate issues, had three parts of it. One is with the MGLD no longer bylaw funding, and that putting it at a financial disparity, particularly due to the IG, and how what might be the administration be doing, or what other things might be do, knowing that MGLD does offer a variety of important activities on campus, especially for students of color. And then what are some of the recommendations or opportunities that have now been presented in the report, the Chicago report in particular, and what might successfully, what might satisfy the community action by members of other areas in the university. Again, we don't have a definitive solution yet to the MGLC. I'm aware of two conversations at least, but there's probably three or four. This past weekend, the Security Sorority Advisory Council, we took up the issue as an advisory council, and what role can it play in trying to address it, what role can it play to help access and build the database around our MGLC alumni to make sure they are fully aware of how they could be supported, because that's where a lot of stuff comes into the IFC and panel at it. So we're looking at both organizations and individual members. I know that there is we've had some conversations with a lot and thinking about other ways to partner, particularly around cultural activities that are offered, they each come through with GLP, but they're the first officer in GLP and still be confident in the Alana mission. I'm prepared to, and I said this earlier, to have a conversation with an ex trying to work his way through what I consider the traditional plan. The funding for the per se, you guys know the 790, is about 6,500 to 7,000. I don't think the administration should be in the business of funding student groups the students don't think are important to fund. And I don't think that this is something that is important to understand that what the student assembly rules are and how the GLP is structured doesn't really align. But we don't, in a major way, commit to fund individual student organizations. So I think the question would be, how can we make sure that the important role that GLP is playing among others and making a vibrant community for the campus overall and the different approaches of color? I don't think any of that got lost because the traditional source of funding is lost. And, I'm open to thinking about that broadly without just writing a $500 check from my discretionary dollars to the NGLC, because why would that, what might I want to do that and not for taxes or NAICS or some other groups? So I don't have an absolute answer, but I'm very committed to working to make sure we don't lose what contribution difference. In terms of the study of the topic report, I've read it now twice, and I haven't sat down with my staff yet to go through it. Other than there are clearly some things that you noted, and I hope that the report that Vice Provost Brown did kind of cover that when she released the report, there are two areas that it's hard to do already, trying to gear up to figure out what we're going to do. One has to do with the ongoing program is called Tapestry. Not a new idea, we've just been talking about it for a number of years. We have the structure of ourselves to figure out how we align 626 with residential programs and other things to do that, but I think we are going to try our very best to get some of that underway in the fall. That's an important piece. It will line up with what we also have to be doing in compliance area and protection environment. And then the other area is our partnership with human resources and data services and other bias incident response and making sure that we can be as clear as we can be to the community about what the protocols are and what the processes are and access it. In terms of a lot of the other particulars, we need to find a sense of staff and work our way through to figure out what if you go low hanging fruit, what we need to partner with the students and what is a longer term issue. That and the work of the University Council itself and what we're making as a vision. It will be embedded in our vision work as we define our five diversity goals for our historical destination. We've had the same five goals for the last 2 years, and we'll be looking at we continue on those existing goals as we work some of those or in fact just technically change them because of present issues that become very clear as a result of the climate study that we did this past year, both the quantitative and the qualitative. So as the destination goals get set in the next month or two, we'll certainly be using that to inform ours and I would get other units to be doing the same.
Absolutely. So with that, are there any other questions from the community at this time? Yes, no. No. Assembly member from the floor while we have VP Murphy for your last chance. DOE Murphy. That was it. Those are the three things.
I'll keep my question kind of open-ended, I guess, because I didn't submit it, so I'll give the leeway to you and how you want to answer. But I'm just wondering in terms of the end of the year, next year we'll have a new freshman class on campus. If you can maybe comment on how the student experience has improved over the last 4 years in terms of as a senior graduating. I've been here for 4 years, seen a lot of changes, from Greek life to housing issues that we talked about to campus climate. We made a lot of strides. So I'm wondering maybe what you think, how the class of 2018 will have a better, worse, same experience of the class of 2014.
I probably should be giving that question to all of you. But I'll give you a couple of my own perspectives. I think that the class of 2018 will be entering a campus that is speaking much more openly and directly about official sexual violence prevention. That will inform some of the particular programs we will be doing, some we must be doing, and everything we must be doing we already are. So our challenge, I think, is not just what more can we be doing to make sure that the community issues, but it's still a community issue, men and women, whether it's education, whether it's the outreach. I think the class of 2018 will come into a student community that very committed to being active bystanders on all kinds of issues. I've seen that in the leadership of people's lives around alcohol. I've seen that in conversations with bringing forward our little man and sexual violence is coming up on the top of the meeting. Again, this is not a brand new conversation, but it's got much more, many more facets to it and many more students engaged. I think the climate study will focus us in a more collaborative way, so there's no single office, no single college, no single unit. The way we're going to really get at some of these broad-based underlying issues is because we work in partnership with the students and with ourselves. And I hope that the class of 2018 during this time here will see a ramp up in public engagement. Again, I think there's a lot that happened in the last 3 years with the creation of the Center for Engagement and Research, building on top of what the public service sector is doing. But we're in the midst of a very comfortable conversation about can we now take the foundation that the students and the starting to develop for faculty and take it to a whole new level of product. Such as the 10th year as an opportunity to leap us forward in the kind of very special place in higher ed. So those are the two things. And I dare say the class of 2018, when they graduate in 2018, will be looking at a campus that is even more diverse than it is when they enter in 2014, which is, I think, your class is looking at a campus that looks different than 4 years ago.
Some of us enter 2013, but it's fine. Yeah, you know, can't help it. VP with the show.
Yeah, so you talked a couple times about sexual assault, sexual violence on this campus. The White House just released their first initial report from their task force on sexual assault on college campuses, and I'm curious as to what has the council at Cornell done? What action items are coming out of that? Maybe I'm missing them. And then what action items you guys are planning to take on as a result of this initial report, if any? I know that some of them touch on things that we already do or have recently done, but I want to hear a little bit about that.
So this year, the council probably focused attention in a couple of ways. One, trying to be assistant in working with Mary Beth and Grant and all who are involved in the new policies of moving the adjudication of sexual violence prevention cases from the campus code into policy 6.4. That has happened, the policy was changed before the year began. It's still trying to work through how public we make the outcomes of it, how can we make sure people are appropriately trained, how can we move it along within the time frame we establish. So we've been spending some time on that issue. The last meeting, we heard reports from three committees related to the education and outreach, one on faculty and staff, one on grad students, and one on undergrads. And so we're now looking at the recommendations of those individual committees that made, what we will have in place in the fall. Again, some of this will be mandated because it is as of August 14th. And so for students in particular, we will continue to speak about it for the undergrads and the transfers. We are developing programs for Johnson Law, grad, and vet, and some combination of material that we're using to practice with the faculty. And so there'll be every professional student, grad students will also have information. Not in the same form, we'll speak about it, but that will be something we'll be looking at in the longer term. And then all the new faculty and staff will also be going through education programs. So we're getting in place right now what we must do for the initial education, and then we're looking at what will be sustaining. In the case of faculty and staff, there's partnership going on with United Educators to develop a web-based education tool, somewhat like Expect at Cornell, that was put in place. And we're trying to work our way, again, distinguishing from that with the use of graduate students and the role of TAs. And then looking at some of the other areas when we think about the ongoing education for 14,000 undergrads, you know, we're not attached to any one group. So how is it we get together what we're doing about athletes in our groups and in our residents all our inclusive organizations that allows us to say with good conscience, every upper class, every student after freshman year is getting some exposure aware of education about these issues, whether it's about what is consent and what is not consent. So that's probably where our major focus right now is over 30 on that education and outreach component and being ready for the fall. And then we're also right now looking at the variety of things that are going on the legislative agenda. So I may well be taking a trip to Washington to meet with the staff, which is Senator Gilbert and Senator Castle.
Okay.
We have received the survey that President Castle's office has put out, so we'll be responding to that. And thinking if we could find a way to incorporate Cornell into that national dialogue. Because I think the approach that we're taking of the public health model and the linkage of this issue with other issues, so alcohol, sexual violence prevention, aging sexual violence prevention, they each need their own focus, but frankly there's overlap. So I think it's just a minute about bystanders. We need to have some common language training on bystanders and then take it to the particular issue. So not every campus is doing it, some other campuses are thinking in a very I also hope, I don't know if it's all, I hope over the summer we'll be able to get the shared website and some more responsive design that will be easily accessible from your mobile devices as it is from the computer. That's been recommendation from the communications group. I don't yet know what it's going to take for us dollars to resource wise, but that's certainly a high priority because you guys all operate in that environment.
Thank you.
And finally, community member Olivia Obudaga, the three of you who are still on the list, just send them afterwards and we can get it.
The shared governance system, not necessarily that the people, especially families, don't want to take action if they don't have certain constituencies, but that they don't necessarily have the power to do so. So I'm curious from your, like, what your opinion is on this critique and how administration is
I still believe strongly in the shared government system and will want to do all that I can to have it be as strong as it can be. I think that one of the challenges, and I'll speak about the student assembly in particular, because that is one of the focus, that I talked with Ulysses about is how can we help and support the student assembly as student groups raise issues to find venues for those issues to be addressed. Not every issue, and I'm not going to speak about particular resolutions, but in general, not every issue needs to come to resolution. Not every issue necessarily needs to be debated at a Thursday FAU. But I do believe the FAU is a place for students to say, we need to be able to talk about this, we need to be able to do this. If they want action, it does need a resolution. If they want engaged dialogue or learning, they can come to administration or to the very second, but also go to the student assembly, and then we can help them, they with their own resources, and how can they partner with the faculty and administration screening office, so to take a debate, let's say, about let's say policy is a favorite topic. In this case, we did add that resolution. The president did respond, not in the way that the shared government system would have preferred as it pertains to the assessment position, but did in the area of what we're going to do about neutrality. Should the conversation about investment policy of companies continue on campus, I think it absolutely should. Maybe not through resolutions, but how do you define it? involved in talking with the political folks. How do we bring together the companies with the environmentalists so that as a shapeful community taking on difficult issues, there's a forum for those workers to be heard and the issues to be vetted, not the role of all three. So from my point of view, I think there's a role for students to feel, I would want students to feel that they can bring any issue they want to the SA, and what the SA needs to work on it, we have to talk a little about it. How do they collect those issues and then decide what's the right place for them to go? Is it for abandoning the agenda so that they have a dialogue? Is it asking the administration help to find speakers? Is it asking the administration help to prepare our capacity? But let the issue come to the students and then to be able to write the agenda. That's how I think about it.
So, great. So, you know, we've expired the time that you have, and I don't want to keep you too long.
And please, if you have other issues, send them along, and I'll try to give you something. Let me just say to all of you, as members of the SA, thank you for your year of service. Appreciate it very, very, very much. And for those of you who are graduating, we'll miss you. Those of you who are going on other things on campus, we'll miss you and miss you, but I know those people are on campus.
Thanks again. Okay, now we're going to continue with business of the day. So next is R76, verifying the fall 2014 elections rules. Sponsor. Sure. To reintroduce? Yeah, sure. Is that good?
Just last week, three of you reached out to me. I had two of my questions proposed. It was left by me on the block. Last year, I had some questions on the election. That's what I was thinking today. At least today, I think this is a good thing. Questions for this one. I have two of them.
So before we go on, just to clarify, you're striking pages, the word pages from the first thing, and then the second thing you're changing to.
We're adding except for outdoor rallies.
Except for outdoor rallies.
And Gina, feel free, because I want to make sure that we're consistent and not just passing, like, just to make sure we're all good on that front. All right, so we are now going to open up discussion on the amendments as they have, or amendments as they have been proposed. So that's striking pages and then adding the words except for outdoor rallies. The other thing I'm going to say to you is it's no longer a use of university property policy. It's an event registration form. It's event registration form? Okay. I don't remember what the name of it is, but it's event registration form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Gina knows it better than I do. Juliana's at the ERF.
Oh, she's making it up.
Oh. Yeah. We are going to discuss the amendments as soon as we get them right. Don't worry. Everybody who just motioned to me to be on speaker's list is on speaker's list. No, because the rally still would fall under. We'll talk about it. All right, so now we're going to open up those things. So first on the speaker's list is VP Block. Or did you just want to be on the...
I want to be on the general.
The general. Okay. Then, Rep. Alicon. Just the general. This is only for the amendment. Speak on this first. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. Questions on the amendment?
Point of information.
Yes.
So the first amendment was section 5, part D, number 5,
somewhere. Electronic communications and social media is the title of that section.
Okay. I call the question on the amendment.
There's been a call to question on the amendment. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, I suppose, please raise your placard. All those opposed? All those abstain? By a vote of 19-0-0, the amendments passed. Moving back into discussion on the general resolution itself, unless you were you finished? Oh, okay, moving back to the general discussion, first is VP Block.
Yeah, I'm just going to say quickly, I think that these look pretty good. I don't think there needs to be much debate on this. This is a model that's worked pretty well. I think it worked pretty well in this last election. You know, obviously, this being the fall election, we shouldn't be talking about slates or anything like that because it's not really applicable. So I'd say unless people have any really disastrous worries they have about these elections, I think we should vote on them. So I'm going to call the question.
There's been a call to question. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? It's been dissent. So seeing that, we are going to vote to vote. All those in favor of...
Please, please, explain it just that.
Oh, explain 10 seconds. Go ahead. Good Lord, people.
Like I said before, last week, the show
great. So with that, we are going to vote to vote. All those in favor of closing discussion and voting on the election rules, please raise your placards. All right, final answer. 1, 2, 3. All those opposed. All those abstain. Because these numbers are not adding up. 1, 2, 3. And there are. Thank you. I was like, where is that? All right, by a vote of 8-11-3, the motion does not meet the 2/3 majority required. Therefore, we're going back into discussion on the general resolution as it stands.
What?
I'm going to amend Article 2, Section B, Subsection 2.
There's been a motion to amend, say it slowly.
Article 3, subsection 2.
All right. To what? What's the amendment? So there has been a motion to strike that entire section as it stands.
Sorry, what are we talking about?
It's the section, of direct election of president and executive vice president, EVP, under that, on that's Article 2, and he's saying B, Part B is restrictions on tickets and, or on ticketing and slates.
Can I get on the screen?
So,
I think
we,
just to clarify, your amendment is to strike Part 2 or the whole Section B? The whole Section B?
Subsection 2,
special circumstance for the president of the EVP election, just so we're clear. To be honest, this is actually not germane to this discussion right now, because we are not talking about presidential EVP races. They do not apply to the fall election. If you want, this is what we said in the beginning. This is, we discussed this on exec as well. Like this, the discussion that we're having here today is going to be on the fall elections rule as they apply to the four first year students, the transfer students, and I guess the seats that were unfilled, which is
LGBTQ
and arts and sciences. So when you get to the win next year's assembly, I saw the new DOE in here. Did I? Am I kidding? Am I lying? Okay. I saw the new DOE in here. That will be a discussion for that assembly. We thought we only set the rules for the fall. Like, that's it. Great. You want
to?
Sure, please.
I think you want to restrike this and it's going to have absolutely no difference in the fall elections. You will have absolutely no difference in the debate that happens next fall. And people will just bring the students to the debate. But this one, I think there are not only people advocating, but there is LG advocating something. So this is a member of the race as well. Like I said last time, I did not predict this change as the reason that the turnout was lower. You might expect that the first one has that debate that's much better to be had next year. It will be had next year, I'm sure. I just don't see what I thought we would take that time for. We have a full change in our it's not a question that we can talk about this last week. I mean, you did reach out to us this week. So if you really want to have a discussion about this, we have to do it. Now that it's not really going to do anything,
great. All right. So no more time on that. Reserving my rights as the chair, as delineated and codified in the standing rules, I am going to call this discussion without need for a second or a vote on that, because I do not find this germane to this discussion right now. And as the sponsor has said, it is purely symbolic. It will not do this. So vote as you will. This has been called to question. If you are in favor of the amendment, which is striking in Part B, or Article 2, Part B, Section 2, special circumstance for the president and the EVP election, if you're in favor of that, striking that part, raise your placards at this time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Rihanna, is that a yes? No. 12, 13. All those abstained. 1, 2, 3, 4. By a vote of 6-13-4, the amendment fails. We're moving back into general discussion on the election rules. There's been a call to question. It has been seconded. Is there any dissent? There has been dissent expressed. You have 10 seconds to explain your dissent.
I apologize for my dissent, but I want to respect the polling booth and possibly add an additional not containing your polling booth.
So the dissent has been expressed to the people who called the question, want to withdraw the dissent.
No.
If not, we're going to vote to vote.
I don't withdraw.
Since they do not want to, their point of information or point of parliamentary procedure. She said she wants to discuss the polling section and the possibility of adding a different, you said location or number of poll seats or the feet, the distance that they can. Where can they? All right, great. So with that being expressed, we are going to vote since they do not want to withdraw their dissent. All those in favor of closing discussion and voting on this, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3. All those opposed. All those who abstain. By a vote of 3-18-0, we are going to continue general discussion once again. Next on speaker's list is going to be Rep. Quinnott.
I have a motion for a point of personal privilege to briefly address the assembly for 30 seconds.
For what?
We'll talk about this. We have a lot of shit to get through.
Well, get
30 seconds.
We're going to get to, well, then get on the speaker's list. Next is Rep. Quinnott.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I don't want
to.
We're talking yards, meters, or feet. Okay, I fathoms, please.
All right, great. So there has been an amendment. Could you please give the location of your amendment? For everybody to put it clear. I need a side conversation to stop now. Please state the section and the content of your amendment. What section is that? So everybody can get to it.
Give the exact point. So if it's section Article 3, section B, give what the information is.
Enrico, we need to.
I can say
Article 3,
section B.
Okay. Thank you.
It's the only thing underlined.
All right.
It's underlined.
Thank
it's the one thing that Alphonse added. It's underlined in the document. You should be able to
Article 3, Section B, Point 8. The content is. Go for it.
The content which was going to be added anyway is for the benefit of students and elections to be used for established voting booths across campus on the day of the election, and then all campaigners will be forbidden from campaigning 100 meters around
the campus. So I'm writing all candidates are prohibited from campaigning within 150 meters of the voting booth.
How far?
That's a long way. Feet. Can we do feet? Would that be?
That is
33 meters.
Just for the sake.
Approximately.
It's gonna say 150 feet is reasonable.
Oh my God.
Right. We got yeah. We're gonna say 150 feet of the voting booth. All right, listen, people in the audience, they have things to get through. The faster we get through this, the better. So, all right, so the amendment is all candidates are prohibited from campaigning within 150 feet of a voting booth. That is the amendment that is on the table. First on the speaker's list is going to be VP Block.
Okay. Wonderful. So, first off,
I think this is a dumb idea, and here's why. If we put in this requirement, what you're essentially doing is reducing the number of places that the DOE is now going to put these things, because now they're going to be worried, well, if I put one in the lobby of Willard Straight Hall, that means that no one can campaign on Hope Plaza, right? So you're going to have a natural, the DOE is now going to have to think about where they put their voting booth. They're not going to want to put them near areas of high traffic, which is exactly where we want our people to be campaigning, right? Like, we want people to be campaigning in high traffic areas. I think if you really want to reduce this problem, which honestly is not a huge concept, put something like 25 feet, you know, in the immediate vicinity. Don't be there right next to the polling booth. But I think that this is kind of ridiculous. Like, is anyone going to be walking around with a measuring stick, you know, like figuring out where 25 feet is? Like, really, guys? And secondly, I'd just say we have a lot of stuff to get through that needs to be heard today that can be voted on tomorrow. I don't think there's a such consequence.
All right.
I'm going to motion to vote. A motion to amend this to 25 feet.
We're not going to – there's parliamentary procedure here, and I don't think you can amend an amendment right now.
Yeah, you can.
Jordan?
I have.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Am I allowed to amend an amendment?
Are you allowed to amend an amendment on the floor?
Yeah.
If the sponsor finds it –
no, friendly amendment. Yeah. Probably belongs to these two papers.
Okay.
The sponsor finds it friendly. So just so everybody. So 25 feet is the number that is now in place.
I call the question on the amendment.
There's been a call to question on the amendment. It has been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are voting on the amendment. Seeing none, we are going to vote on this. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your flag.
I mean, that is fine.
One, two, three, four, five. All those opposed? All those abstain. By a vote of 21-0, the amendment passes. Again, side of conversation. Moving back into general discussion.
There's
been a call to question on the resolution for the third time. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to vote on the elections rules. Noah, I'm going to ask that you do a roll call vote for me, please, so we get it all done.
Yes. Don't worry. This is my last meeting.
No, she got one more.
Did she give me the last one?
She did. She gave me
no. Mom. Okay. Oh, I have to have one. Thank you.
I don't vote. Keep going. Unanimously, there we go. Unanimously, the elections rules pass. Great. Fantastic.
I have a motion. I move to move Resolution 78 up to the top of the docket to quickly do this. It should be pretty short. Let's please get out of here.
There's been a motion to move R78 up on the docket. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent to that?
Ahead of it.
All right, so R78 can be heard. So sponsors.
Go, Blaze.
Aren't you up there, too?
Oh, I was like, me? No, I'm not.
Oh, no.
I'd rather be here.
I know. Are you curious? Are you?
I don't know if I'm wrong. I don't really know how high the
we get that on the record?
All right, sponsors, 2 minutes, let's go.
Hurry up.
Sponsors.
So this is pretty standard to improve the SAP co-schedule to the Eastern operation. Quick amendment, that's the right house after one year, house K-A-N-D. And that's about it. So the house came with the SAP co-schedule, allocate the credit.
Good? All right, great. First on speaking, this is Rep. Talbot, LGBT.
Second.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Second.
Is this business for today?
I moved to make business today.
All right, this is moved to make this business of today. No, you're good. There's been a move to make this a business of today. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent to that? You can still ask a question during business of the day. We're just moving it to business of the day. Are you dissenting to moving it to business of the day? All right. So, in seeing no dissent, it is now business of the day. Opened up for discussion. You still want to discuss? Great. There's been a call to question, but I'm going to let him speak first. Go ahead. We're going to call the question. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are just going to do simple placard vote. All those in favor of R78, proving the co-chair is raised to placards. One. Yes, gosh, thanks. One,
with
two,
the last
three.
Name added, right?
With the last name added. Well, it has to be in there. You can't just approve an Alec. One, two. There we go. All right, all those opposed. All those who abstain. My vote is 24-0-0. R78 passes. All right, moving on to the next item on the agenda.
83.
Say it.
83.
Next item on the agenda is 83. What was 77 is 83. It's only listed as new business, but it's the exact same thing. So, or not exact same thing, but they're changing.
So we got it. The second pile.
All the stuff I have. Crazy. I can't do this right now. Just don't worry about it. Go for it.
Great. Good afternoon, everyone. So here we are looking at the most updated version of the Student Assembly Infrastructure Fund. So we heard it not come again. We've got some good discussion. I did want to make a friendly amendment, which is an eligibility to Section 6 under eligibility, letter B, which is not previously requested funding from that dash for the same purpose. I don't agree, it's not previously requested to receive the funding.
No, actually, I think everybody's still trying to find the actual stuff, or at least I am. Let me try to do it. So I had a pile of paperwork over here. I had to get through it all. All right, say that one more time for me.
So in section 6, under eligibility, letter E, it should not have previously requested, insert, and received a funding gift from that SAI application purpose. So basically, you see that there may be years where the same application comes up for that SAI year after year, but it doesn't get chosen that doesn't come from the project. It's just that the permission has other priorities that year.
Okay.
So
that was it?
That's the only other amendment I got. And I just want to talk briefly about where we're at with this right now. I spoke with the other one on Monday, had a really good conversation. I think that this, truthfully, can be very, very impactful part of the system. I believe very strongly that in my 4 years, this is going to be one of the biggest things I end up doing. I think that if done well, it's like a power to really change the way things interact with the assembly, because it's really making the assembly another outlet for things that you want to get done. What Team Hubble said, I think, is very important to reiterate is that we should always be trying to match responsible to building managers. So we should never, you know, there may be situations where we take on a full cost or something, but we can really expand the power of that AI. My team is working with building managers, see what kind of projects could be fun partially and game fun partially for you. And so I think that that's just something the commission is keeping in mind. It is labeled as a submission. Now, what that means is that after this is approved by President Sorum, hopefully, it's approved by President Sorum, the commission needs to create a charter for itself, a state constitution. I would imagine that this constitution would look very similar to what's laid out in this resolution. It's a very, you know, copy-paste on everything from this. And I'll soon be in contact with Shanko and whoever, I guess, leads SA for next year, like the committee, the commission chair, to kind of look over all of this. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if I could get back there with some language. The president is going to want things that are very specific in the media, and we can make small changes that we can make to make this more particular, especially when we're dealing with a large number of large amount of money. But I will say that I think that you guys don't understand what the purpose of this is, and I have a lot of faith in SA next year to take on the mission. As far as the difference that I made from last meeting to this meeting, you really don't have a very good idea. I put in under eligibility the initiative located on the campus of Cornell University. Basically, wanting to give all students access to it. I think that they should occur on campus rather than some part of college. If you have questions about that, let me know. The other thing that we put in. Students are aware of this, and they probably immediately think that they know this
bunch of really a very, very good stuff. So the kind of point I have is just getting more people to see the requirements that the submission care, along with DBTR, DBI, all are working with us to figure out how can we be or how can we be publicized. Other than that, we did have a long discussion in that mission on whether or not it should be a majority of the members. I think that's a wonderful decision, but you know, I can read the argument that should be a ESA member versus second member. I still believe after thinking about it that I think it's good to have at least the first year have any assembly members, and only because this is a project that is still somewhat external to the assembly. But I think that in future years it's something we should strongly consider looking at. It's, you know, it can become more established, more students are aware of it, more students are interacting with it, you can kind of push it off the assembly a little bit more. But I still think in the future smart to see the majority assembly members see that part directly within the student assembly. Other than that, I'm sorry, I'm not going to update you. I'll make sure to print that out for tomorrow, but those are the substantive changes. And I also want to note you to, as far as sponsors to put in, Mark Yosai and Adam Nicoletti, I think that they put an enormous amount of work into this fund. I'm just kind of making it to work for you today. I'm just kind of talking about the end, so I'd like to put that one as sponsors as well.
Okie dokie.
Other than that, I'd like to take over for now and make sure we do our tomorrow.
Okay. So there's been a motion to table. Do you mind if we, if people ask some questions?
Oh, absolutely.
There are a few. So first on the speaker, this is Rep. Bernardi.
Yeah, I think this is great. We should have been more really thought about it, which is that we should be creating the alignment, the end of creating a community that wants the money to go with it. All of these groups are really needing money. And maybe we should be looking at one money number that every organization that a group that receives the money should hire or work on how the money is spent eventually. Because what I see is that giving money to organizations, there is always something that happens. So sometimes things don't go well, sometimes they do go well. So maybe we should have a mechanism to check how it goes. So the money maybe doesn't have to disappear or just to see. We can also follow and track the effect, the impact that the money is having. We know so that the security is important, and we think that that is going to be the same thing as well. So I was just wondering about if it's going to be like today and before we go tomorrow, some mechanism of the before we start and things like that.
I find that from the interest of the mind.
No.
No, I mentioned that you just because the sponsors of other resolutions are here and they can be passed.
There's been a move to table the resolution until tomorrow. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent?
Yeah.
There's dissent to that, so you have 10 seconds.
I just think that there's a question that we need to ask that facilitates
some of the resolution. There's something that we need to
be thinking about. I have two topics to spend now.
Great. So seeing that, now that that's been on the table, we are now going, point of information.
Are there things on the agenda that have to be seen today in order to be voted on tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
But I think we have some. I definitely want to take this question.
Great. So with that, we are going to vote. What?
Will we address this tomorrow?
This?
Yes. We need
like, yes. The resolution itself? Yes. So we are going to vote to vote. All those in favor of table, of closing discussion and tabling the resolution until tomorrow, please raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. All those opposed. Maletti, what are you doing? Are you voting? Yes, you voted yes. Sir. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11. Oh, baby. All those who abstain. By a vote of 11 to 1, it doesn't reach the 2/3 majority, so we're back into discussion once again on this. Next one, the speaker says, is Representative Talbot, or actually it's you. Yeah. Yeah. Nope. Great. Rep. Basco.
Thank you. So I have two questions. First one is, how is the money being
is the money being invested by the endowment, by the fees that the university is providing to students? Second question is when the money is being spent, is it given to the opportunities that you're carrying, is the students here going to do the construction project? What exactly is going on with how the money is actually being allocated or anything else?
Right. So as far as where it is right now,
FFP.
So we're making money on it, but we're not providing it. And then as far as the process, what we have in the constitution and the resolution would be that we are asking the specific student group of accomplishing this. So again, the last example is going to be CUSD is going to do something on the campus and build it, then we would move our funds from the endowment into their self account, into their operating account. However, generally, what I ask for most would be that we move money from our operating account of that AIP into a building manager account, not a university account. So basically, a lot of the work is going to be with building managers figuring out what we can improve, so we move money from us to them, hopefully, they'll be matching our funds as well as partially. So we're not paying more. Yeah, I think it functions in better suited for the constitution of it because of the commission to the specific constitution as well, much like the FAA does. I think something that can be expanded upon board, once you know the general legal and the general purposes is approved by the president and staff, then we'll put in the constitution to specifically lay out step by step what's going to happen in more so than this. But certainly we want to follow up and we want to make sure that the money that we transfer over is spent in full and it's not
Thank you.
Next is Representative Stefanko.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment. Because it is a commission, I think that we can drive a lot of things specifically that we want to see out of it, but a lot of these things will be in the charter next year and we get worked out when we're developing that. So once you have something to do, it's really passionately about what needs to be in the building model for us to be in the charter anyway. So.
That extinguishes the previous rule. At this time, there you go. There's been a motion to table. It's done. We've extinguished the speaker list. We're tabling it until tomorrow. It'll come up tomorrow. Thanks, right now. At this time, the other things that need to be heard today would be changing the SAC guidelines for USB. USB really should be heard today, but although USB itself is not a charter change, so you're fine with that. It's a piece of legislation. But 80, what's written as 80 needs to be heard today. The Alana Constitution is 81 and also 84 needs to be heard today. I'd rather get Alana up here first with the Constitution. They've been waiting just, and you guys can all do it simultaneously. But let's go through their Constitution first. Would that make sense for you?
Yeah, that's fine. So we're going to quickly roll through, yes?
Yeah, we're going to have to. We're going to roll through, but.
Then I need them in 80.
Well, I'm telling you right now, we're going to hear their constitution first. Yeah. 80, yeah. I'm sorry, 81. Y'all, Alana constitution changes. Did I not give it that? Oh, sorry. What? I don't know what you're saying.
You will see.
It was sent via email.
No, I have it.
We might not actually get to USB, but the guideline changes, the FSC guideline changes need to be heard today. The Constitution? Well, it's part of it from the separate amendment needs to go into USB. Which is why I said they probably need to go for FSC. All right, sorry, go ahead.
One big thing I'm doing, though, is that issue in relation to the discussion around the office funding. And we made your decision, and thankfully voted on substantially increased the funding. What you see here before you is a culmination of several discussions that represent a fair compromise between the FASC and the Obama. We both take an offer and we both take an analysis. So what we're asking you to do now is to look at these changes and to vote today to make the amendments. What I have, you look to the first page, the changes to the Obama Constitution.
They are summarized description of all of the changes, very simplified by voting, many changes, umbrella organization changes, executive board changes. These are basically to increase transparency and fairness. Jeff Block and others have already approved of these changes. There are just three or one amendment that other people want to receive and we need one more approval of it.
Before you read that totally, can you tell us where exactly we're inserting
it? Oh, okay. So it would be in addition to Article 9, so
So actually, let's go one by one. So just so everybody is clear, the First Amendment, if you look at Article 9 of the Atlanta Constitution, which luckily is on page 9 of the Constitution, it's titled Co-Sponsorships, Co-Programs, Executive Board Programs, and Umbrella Organizations Programs. Make sense? Good. So, and then what's being inserted, I'm assuming at the end, it just doesn't make sense right there. Okay. At the end of that is the clause that reads, student organizations that are not registered under ALANA and an umbrella organization but hold an SAFC performance tier status are not eligible to receive co-sponsorship or co-programming funds from ALANA. Is everybody clear on the amendment?
So just to clarify, the purpose behind that is to prevent SAFC top-tier groups that are not associated with ALANA from receiving co-sponsorship, co-programming, but still allow non-top-tier, non-affiliated groups to receive co-sponsorship, co-programming?
Correct.
Okay.
One of information.
Yeah.
So if these groups do still want to, like, hold events with ALANA, how do they go about doing that? Like, instead of, like, sharing the funds or requesting funds, how can they still put on events?
So it would have to be an actual collaboration. So an example comes to mind is often be joint sponsors. So they would have to be active in putting on the program together. But if they're just asking for funds from us, what they can be funding them, they would be eligible to have a
program. Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense? Are there any other questions on that amendment as it has been proposed? There's been a call to question. I'm going to ask for unanimous consent on this one. Is there any dissent to that? Seeing none, the First Amendment is adopted by unanimous consent. The second amendment that is being proposed. Oh, my phone just timed out. The second amendment that is being proposed is long. I don't know if it's. Should I?
So it's basically saying that if an umbrella organization
but they have to ask the umbrella organization, or the umbrella organization whose funds it actually is.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they're not asking Alana to take the fund, to just give them the leftover funds. They're actually asking the other umbrella organization who has the surplus if they would consent to use to them to transferring those funds over for whatever that purpose might be. Does that make sense? All right, so we're going to open up for discussion on that one first, is the Rep. Stefanko.
Yeah, so
the
question is,
And just to clarify, this is under the section titled Umbrella Tier Fund, that's correct. Yeah, sorry, I meant to say that earlier. So that's on page 13. All right. Next is Rep. Minotti. Nope. Next is Rep. Maletti. Just to clarify something that just wasn't gone out of in your introduction, that's what Olivia just described is actually something that is now mandated in the Constitution. These regular meetings that weren't actually happening before, it's actually, you have like a fun, you have the executive committee. I'll name them all. There you go.
Yeah, so.
Sounds good. Next is VP Block.
Okay. I would just ask that we hold off on this amendment. I personally could think about it a little bit overnight. I think that in theory the idea is really good. Like, we obviously, if groups aren't spending their money, we want Alana in general to be able to spend it. But I think that what I worry about is you have one umbrella go to another and say, well, you know, we know you don't really need this money, like, you're not really using your money, you know, you should give us your money. And then you kind of get into this conflict between the umbrellas, where one umbrella is telling another umbrella that they're not using their money well, or that they don't need that amount of money. And I think that, in many ways, the corrective measure should be yearly to reevaluate the amount that goes to each umbrella. You know, look at their spending, and at the end of the year say, well, you spent this amount, we spent this amount, let's readjust for the next year. And I think that what you're proposing would in theory be efficient. I'm just worried about, you know, one umbrella going to another and saying, you're not really using your money well, give it to us. Kind of like there's an inherent pressure there. And I don't know if you spoke, if all the umbrellas are fully on board with this, then, I'll feel more confident about it. I think that's a possibility that could come up.
Right, so this amendment will actually suggest the by the umbrellas. So this is something that they're asking. So they actually for the with the non-effective.
Great. So with that, there's one more person that speaks, and then we're going to actually move along. So go forward.
Yeah, I guess my I would think it would be much better if the particular umbrella has to volunteer their funds, say we're done for the year, and then they're stepped out of an account. If
anyone would like to feel what was that back in school. Maybe that would be better to look at different phone house than just looking at. I'm just looking at saying they like have to sort of say to someone like, oh, you're not.
The changes do account for that, and at the end of the year, after the program is done, which is something that we will evaluate, once the program has been done, then we ask how much money do you have to over, and that person will be able to donate it from a volunteer to the funds.
Okay. So the volunteer has to fund the funds?
It goes volunteer to the
funds. Okay, so when you're not organization is volunteer, there's nothing we have a surplus of funds, but an adult organization has to specifically ask for the funds as well. So we have the funds and then you're asking for the funds. So you can't just say, oh, we have a surplus, you're really going to be an adult organization.
Yeah. So, and just so we're all clear, Lord, what am I saying? So I'm actually going to send this out because it doesn't seem actually clear to everybody there, but there's a process here that actually that accounts for all the questions that you're actually asking. So we're going to send this out. I'm going to allow VP Harris to ask this question, and then we're going to move on. Yeah. What? Is there a question? I'm referring to this amendment in particular.
You guys should summarize it.
Because
we need to send up the language.
Yeah, they're not quite getting the language, and we're getting repetitive questions that are actually explicitly answered in your thing, and it's just hard. It's hard to speak it and have everybody understand. So that's the only thing. No, you do not have that.
Okay. And again, I would like to emphasize that this is something that all of the umbrellas agree about, and they were advocating for. This isn't something that we're
right. Who's been meeting regularly at this point now? VP here.
Thank you. So Jeff took an internal view in terms of like his question. He asked mine's a bit more external, and I see this amendment potentially reducing the collaboration between Alana and her Bell groups with other groups on campus. If they're able to access this funding, it might be less incentivized to reach out to other organizations to kind of collaborate with them with programs to ask money from them. So my question is, how do you plan to enjoy this? I like the idea of that, but I also want to make sure you're still collaborating and reaching out to other groups and other groups who are working on campus. So I just ask that when you consider this, just consider that thought within the framework of this. So a potential solution is like the offers and maybe capping the expenditures in terms of each group getting maybe whatever the amount that you consider, like a maximum of $100 or $500 or $1,000, whatever it is. So that's just my question is, what do you consider that?
I'm not really too sure where
you're going to submit. Could you clarify? Yeah, I'll explain it simply. So if the umbrella groups are able to kind of shift the money around from one group to the other, they're less incentivized to reach out to other groups on campus that are not within Alana. So my fear is that I'm going to see less collaboration between Alana and other groups on campus if they're able to get that funding. So I like this idea, but I just want to make sure that there's still going to be a lot of collaboration and programming going on.
So I think the idea came about because, the umbrella organizations feel like their restrictions are restricted upon in the year coming. And so by doing this, they just open up a little bit more funds if there's an organization that doesn't need it. So I don't think that since they are really restricted, I feel like over the next year, there's going to be a lot of collaboration to make sure that people aren't spending as they used to because they have this problem. So I don't think that's really
important. I think the nature of Alana is to engage other communities, even if they've had it in the past. So I don't think that this per se will change the culture of Alana. In fact, having a surplus amount of money and being able to transfer that money means that you're more able to reach out to other communities because you have more money to offer at the end of the day.
Yeah. Sorry, I lied because I just told them we need to actually move on from this amendment because we need to move back into the general thing. So I'm actually going to table this amendment right now until we get the actual text out to everybody so they can read it. That being said, we're going to go back into just general discussion on the Constitution itself. Before we do that, I am going to move to extend this meeting until 7 p.m. Just so we get through everything else. It's been seconded, no dissent. You really don't have a choice. We've got to get through this anyway. The meeting is extended until 7 p.m. Moving back into general discussion on the amendment, first is VP Block and then to be Revelator. Sorry.
No worries. Okay, so I have a question. I'm looking at
The heading is Umbrella Tier Funding. Umbrella organizations are eligible for funding up to a predetermined amount according to the Student Assembly's Appendix B. The amount is subject to annual review by the Executive Council. So it sounds like there, so in the Appendix B that we sent you, you have a specific amount, I think like $3.07 or something like that, of your budget that must go to umbrella organizations, but there's no delineation amongst the umbrellas. So it's not like CAPSU gets this amount, ESU gets this amount, yada, yada. So is that something that you want in our Appendix B? Because when we're talking about surpluses, we're assuming that there is a set amount that each umbrella has. Is that correct? So would you like us to add in our Appendix B the agreed upon numbers which you sent us 2 weeks ago now, which is like BSU will get this amount, Alana will get the, or excuse me, CAPSU will get this amount. Is that kind of what you expected to be in Appendix B? Does that make sense?
Perhaps
when this comes before the assembly tomorrow, you can add in a section that clearly delineates within your own constitution what amounts each umbrella will be receiving. That way, it'll be in line with your constitution, not Appendix B, but will also allow us, if you're hoping to change that, to also be routed through the assembly. We just need somewhere to delineate what each organization got, much like what was in UPF. Otherwise, we're not going to have any sort of surplus because there's just a set broad amount for all umbrellas right now. One more question. It says the amount is subject to annual review by the Executive Council, so that would just be your executive. So who comprises the Executive Council? Sorry.
It's also
the Executive
Council, but the Executive Council basically comprises of two members of each of the umbrella organizations, each of the organizations, and one of the members has to be the chair of the umbrella organization. So this could be two co-chairs, or in the case of Alana, who has one chair and one in general, so this would be you want a chair and you want to keep this, but it has to be one chair for the development. And that would be your
number. Thank you for explaining all that and getting that all through. It is imperative that all of you read the Constitution. Imperative that all of you read the Constitution. One more time for good measure. It is imperative that all of you read the Constitution before tomorrow. And if you have any questions, send them to the sponsors. One of them happens to be the chair, Alana itself, come on. And the umbrella organizations if you have questions. But to the sponsors first, please. Does that make sense? Great. So seeing that this is going to come up tomorrow, we need to get to Appendix B at this point so we can hear it, because this has to be voted on tomorrow as well as the other thing, and we can include your amendment that you also want in this Appendix B discussion. Next is Appendix B, so please pull out R, what is it? What it looks like now, 80, 81, 83? So many numbers right now. R83 is what it, looks
like.
84 is what it looks like.
People got Appendix B in their email.
At this point, you can pull out your laptop. We had a little hiccup electronically, so please pull out. You can pull out your laptop. It was sent, Sarah sent it via email yesterday.
Oh, wait, actually, no. It's on the back of the...
No, that's Alana's. That's Alana.
Yeah. Okay, well, it should be attached to the resolution that I sent in the... in the FA info email.
So while I'm playing this off, I just want to reiterate what President Smith said. I think that some of the best
please make sure that we recover everything. Okay, so Appendix B. Appendix B is the rules and regulations that affect all students on campus. It sounds like in talking with the for tomorrow, but I just want to run through the big changes that affect all organizations, the changes that affect specific organizations, and we'll go from there. Okay, so starting with things that affect all organizations. First off, attendance tracking. This is something that we've been worried about for a long time. How well are students actually looking at attendance? So we added in section 3 of section C, attendance tracking, each time an organization shall, when possible, provide accurate attendance figures such figures may be required for a number of measures, including swiping for not engaging, taking some team assignment fee, or having someone floor time. The basic point behind this is to mandate that when it is possible for organizations to get specific numbers, they should be working to get those specific numbers. Certainly, there are events, like I can imagine, the TCC outdoor concert and large spots can be pretty difficult to figure out everything. That's just the nature of the beast there. But in general, we think that groups do a better job of working and trying to find and keep having someone getting certain tickets, something like that, to figure out how many people actually did show up. The next added section, section F, is code sponsorship. Organizations must seek the approval by the appropriation to be any of those sponsors exceeding $2,000. Organizations shall contact the finance report or not. The basic point behind this is, I think where we saw some problems were like multiple financial organizations were coming together to all co-sponsor events that became very expensive. We saw this among a number of different financial organizations. So the basic point behind this is just to make check. Say, if we see 4 or 5 financial organizations coming together, that might set up a lot of them. This is something that we'll be adding either tomorrow or maybe some of them explain it. We have one of the funding board data that does this apply to us. We explicitly that this is not supposed to apply to funding. Like when a funding board gives a grant, that's not a co-sponsor. When like 3 or 4 organizations or 2 organizations come together, we need to spend at least $2,000. We want to know about that and keep track. It's not supposed to be a very intensive process, just to make sure that nothing unreasonable is being spent. Much like how under the rules right now, any CapEx expense over $500 has to be approved by the appropriations, because generally it's just sending SAEA Con. Fang and I were meeting with Linda, as well as incoming Econ, we'll be meeting with all the SAEA members hopefully on Tuesday. This is something that I'm talking to Fang about, and I think this is where we really spend a lot of time actually making this system work for them. And so we added in the second page, if an organization feels their liaison is failing in their duty, they make decisions between somebody or replacement. And the basic point is, I think that, the final members have an obligation to us and to our liaisons to be open to them and allow them access to everything that's going on. But at the same time, I think that if the liaison is not doing their job, we should allow them to the organization to come to us and say, hey, this person is really flagging. We think that's a mutually beneficial approach, hold people much more accountable, because that's how we're going to make sure that the system actually works. And really, the liaison system is very powerful. If you're a non-voting member of the exec board, you're sharing the details, you're the person who's making recommendations on behalf of that day. And for a lot of organizations, especially those who have operational difficulties, you have an enormous impact, enormous potential to make impact. Now running through organization specific guidelines, a lot of those came up to reflect the different numbers that were presented back at the end of last semester in December. We're reading at this point. The Collegiate Leadership Program, we added a section to provide a list of publications that they can give us. Basically, some of you are always wondering what other things can we get through the Collegiate Leadership Program. Now we want to specific list, and they did that with the C. Personal Conflict Commission, one that we've been talking about, Sam and I tonight, we added in the Personal Conflict Commission, which I'll strike for. One of them is very good every year. We're hesitant on that, but we'll be discussing that. And the Personal Conflict Commission shall send a report to the Appropriations Committee any kind of conflict losing more money than expected, detailing a lot of impact on the future operations. And that just kind of comes out of the theory. It's basically, if PCC company loses a lot of money, we'd like to know about it rather than just being, we've heard a number of, we haven't heard of any concerts, and not just get our suspicions going that they lost a lot of money. Just reporting feedback to them. EMS, we added in EMS, I'll strive to expand their education on outreach efforts for the 2014-2016 year. years. He's got some important mission to them. Each night, we may do that. Maybe some of them represent every funded event that we've mentioned over a meeting event. So, you know, each night you do a much better job of actually looking what goes on with the event. And they try already to send one of those persons out every event. So, this is something that's in conflict with what they do. We just want to mandate it through a kind of key. Even if they can work to bring a greater number of students into the programming and teach what they need to have their election procedures to determine whether any substantive changes should be made. And that's basically just, you know, there was some controversy with UI things this year, we should have done a review. This is kind of gets in the line of probably going along with this. But with Appendix B, you try to keep it home and try to improve a lot of possibilities, but also through Appendix B, there's a specific priority about the assembly that we can support. We like to put it in there, so, you know, generally, you know, we'd like to, for example, to review how we do that work. You know, it's nothing that, you know, there's nothing specific mandate, just, you know, review it and then you set that for us. OIC, we put in there that by lacking the training semester at OIC, so shall present a report to the FAA on planning activities to just officially kind of know what we're planning on doing, the upcoming orientation, if that's good, and also the allocation. We mandate that the increased allocation would be a focus each side of the event, all the focus in your words and event about sexual assault and kind of things like that. Abroad, we shall maintain the need-based financial aid program. Abroad, we shall conduct a review during the 2014-2016 funding cycle and demographics of those who attend. You know, I think we kind of got that a little bit in their second hearing in front of the assembly, or second hearing in front of the appropriators. But again, it's important to figure out who is coming on abroad research. So, like, year after year, we've heard, like, is this a New York bias thing? Like, are there any of the ones that are actually coming abroad? I think the answer is obviously yes, but it's good for them. School day program is important. So the allocation for the flip day program work, it changed from the last day of classes towards the break at the end of the spring semester to reflect the calendar changes. We put in there flip day shall report to the student assembly in the fall semester regarding the rollover count and the plans intended to reduce it. So they should have a very, very large rollover count. We want to know yearly what was the status of that, because at the end of the day, in 2 years, nothing's been done about it. There's an expected decrease in their student activity allocation. They also wanted to change section 2, Mark, the social security board, does some organized non-alcoholic school stuff. Right now, school stuff is now located between the section area. You couldn't really adhere to it, for Christmas Eve. So we're going to change that to the social security board to organize a social stuff event, current social day focused on non-alcoholic events. So, you know, just kind of, you know, more in line with the reality of what's going on. Wheelchair also meeting was the last one. At least 20 cents will be set aside as we allocated. After co-programming for the Bears Den co-programming account, also that the public key is all important to the FA general body, at least one person that's there. This kind of ethics project, I honestly feel like this semester, this year, we can really do enough on this. So they're going to come before every semester, let us know what's going on with that. Other than that, you know, we recently got all of my items into the organization. We haven't heard a lot of controversy. There are little things that we're working on. I promise you that the copy that we have on tomorrow will be all teached out with all the language, perfect as it should be. But, you know, I think Appendix B is definitely pretty easy. We're just recommending things we'd like organizations to look at, but we keep it pretty broad. I think that the two things that we did for all organizations as far as food sponsorship and as far as attendance figures will be helpful. And so those are things that you guys will be looking at in the future.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm willing to take any questions at all on attendance to be if you have any questions about any of this or any things for a specific organization.
Great. So we're going to open up the speakers for discussion. Right before I get to you, I have actually three questions to ask you. One, what I asked you about particularly for the case of the MGLC, but is that going to be in your thing for tomorrow about organizations who have been a byline-centered organization within a specific time frame? Do they have to apply as a new organization? Is that going to be addressed in your copy tomorrow?
So this is something that Frank and I talked about. This is not that outcomes under Appendix B is under Appendix A, which goes to review next semester.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we're just going to have to, you know, I don't want to not have to, but it's something that will go under review by a member of the president of staff, a member of the GTSA, and a member of the student assembly. This will all meet next semester to go over Appendix A. So we couldn't actually touch it this semester because it's specifically put in our constitution that it has to be put in. It has to be done with a member of the GTSA, a member of the president of staff, and a student assembly member in the non-faculty year. But I think that the broad point behind this is, I guess, what you want to talk about is that, you know, if an organization uses funding for seniors, or they need new organizations and there's a disparate group of student members. So we can sort of draft up a memo or something like that to send it that day, and a lot of people in here just kind of send it to next year or something to bring into that MSPA conversation.
That should tell me that before this meeting. Next thing, yeah, thanks. Next thing would be for your Haven, for the provision, the first provision for Haven. Was there, I'm not sure where your conversation was, but was it, is there a specific number you're looking for? My only concern is it's kind of hard to like tell a group, you know, get 10 million people in here when there is a significant population who, you know, really questions your existence. The first, you know, if you know what I mean, like, I think you're part of your identity that works. So it's just kind of one of those.
Yeah, I mean, the point behind it is not to be too specific.
Right.
It is often general feelings that the effect has been appropriate, especially with, as the total doors are moving from one larger event to smaller, you know, more community-focused event. I think that's great for the community, but also, you know, kind of just for the community, really in a lot of different people. So all we're saying is, well, we need to consider how are you raising people. And you meet your requirements by thinking about it, because sometimes you have to put these kind of things in because it's just a feeling of the appropriation thing that hope in the next 2 years even will work.
Yeah. Oh, that's fine. I just wasn't sure if there was like a number y'all were looking for. I don't know. What did that look like?
And that's why I am.
Right. Yeah. And then finally, in terms of the attendance figures, but also thinking about the GPSA setting, are people going to be required now to make sure that they're checking the distinction between undergraduates and graduate students who are taking advantage of the organizations that, or the programs that these organizations put on that are, in most cases, primarily funded by us? And for instance, with the whole debacle with Slocia a few years ago, if it turns out that a significant number of graduate students are taking advantage of this program or whatever that program is or that service, will we have to then adjust our fees to make sure that the graduate students are paying their fair share? So I don't want to have an instance like Slope Day when we are footing the bill for graduate students to go to Slope Day and then they're not actually, they don't want to fund anything when it comes time to raise the fees.
That's not something we can certainly put in. It's not something we can discuss. As far as specific to Slope Day, in their advocacy, that they're going to be able to give us the demographic information, what they'll continue to do is give us the number of wristbands that will pick up, the number of guest tickets that are picked up undergrad, the number of graduate students that are purchased, the number of graduate students that are purchased. We'll call that the delineation of the school day. With other organizations, we don't really need that data. That may be something that we want to move towards. And certainly, I can imagine, you know, if you're a Cornell IT flight system or what you can find in sheets.
I was just thinking because of your attendance tracking piece, but that sounds good. All right, next on the speaker's list, Olivia, you had a question. Both of those, we're not actually amending this now because this is new business, but when we get to that point tomorrow, likely, those things need to be added just for consistency.
And I just say, you know, very sorry about a lot of things. This is, you know, copying up the whole one and put a new regulation. We certainly put that in the initial thing if you'd like, not require, but if you think your constitution is still your own funding rule, but if you'd like that, then you can certainly put it in.
They want the provision that the amendment that we just passed in their constitution about performance tier organizations not being eligible to apply for or receive funds from them. That's what they want.
Non-affiliated performance tier funding.
The same amendment. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions on Appendix B? No? The time. See, it would be helpful to help iron these things out before tomorrow. Cause it's going to be Friday and y'all are not going to be happy. Are there any questions in the from anybody in the community before I move on? Because this is y'all going to be stuck with these things for the next 2 years, so you better speak now. All right, with that, this will come up tomorrow. If you come up with any questions in the interim, please send them to Jeff, just so everybody's clear on that, and we can bring it up during the discussion as well, but just to make sure everybody gets an answer ironed out for you. All right. Now, did we clarify that? Is there anything else we absolutely need to hear today? Not too much.
I understand you can only have 10 minutes if you're not having a
Well, if we're going to hear anything else, it would be. Did you want to do the 80 and 79? Okay. Yeah.
So you can just.
Well, at least you can still discuss 80.
Okay.
Go for it. You have 10 minutes
left. Everyone has it on my computer.
Yeah.
So we're at this moment. We're actually going to discuss Resolution 80, which is an SAFC changing SAFC guidelines to reflect USB changes. VP Telsky. We have. Don't worry. We're here until 7 p.m. It's only a brief thing. Just need to go over it real quick. Huh? He needed to say he needed to. Yeah. So I'm just.
Walk faster now.
Come on, child. We got places to go.
I wanted a break.
Before you have to see us again in 30 minutes?
Yeah. Well, I'm starting to 7.
I thought it was 7:30.
I think it's
7:30.
Go ahead. I'm sorry?
Do you want me to explain?
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone knows that every week I send out an email to you all with the agenda and all the links in blue. If you click on Resolution 79, it'll bring you to the Assembly's webpage.
Mm-hmm.
If you scroll down, it says Attachment. You're going to need to click on the attachment, which is there. Usually we automatically print the attachment. Brian's sick, so we had a couple of printer issues today. Thanks for bearing with us.
Oh, I already have this.
Can everyone find it? The attachment is called Updated Version of USB or something along those lines.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, are we not on 80? Am I confused? What are you discussing? Oh, I'm sorry. I was confused. I apologize. Okay, so go for it. Yeah.
So the reason we're discussing together is because the main appreciation is the USB that necessitates changing the SAFC guidelines. And this has to do with your performance and your funding. So the main change is now order to be eligible to become a volunteer group or to receive a volunteer funding. So
just going to go through the whole thing. I'm just going to kind of go through and talk to you about our major changes. So starting with production, which is all mostly just the medical things that you would be denied information. So not too important. We changed the number of the examples. Once again, this is clarification, nothing huge. In section two, example two, I just think earlier in the two to show that there's really a whole lot more we can do in terms of ways to structure your work with regional campus. I want to make sure that this example, so we can send examples of photos of the same. We look at it, we kind of reach out to people through LAL, OEI, if they want to meet. If there's ever anything, we want to make sure that these are just the examples and not the rule. So the main thing that I want to discuss, the main change, is the way that we're going to review the So this year, the main issue was that groups could submit their recruitment plans to PE, and PE would review them and write reviews and send them back. The issue was a couple of things. First of all, we can assume all PE sources. PE is not even replacing beyond looking at these separate recruitment plans for the whole year. There really wasn't a new contestant, so there wasn't any separate initiatives that were considered in the separate programming and sort of email of opposition. The other issue was that these witness leads were not particularly good. They didn't really have the organization that they were sent to. And actually, using all these organizations, we realized that there was some particularly deep that was really taken into account, often because they were sort of misinterpreted. So, one of the main issues was that you're simply trying to take a piece of paper back and forth without actually being able to dialogue. So, I'm going to limit that by, first of all, just limiting the group that does the actual reviews and not actually taking So one of the chairs is going to be the community diversity commission, the other chair is going to be co-chair of the community.
Hello.
It's going to have a minimum of 8 members, and these members of course will be doing all the reviews, or they're going to be doing this whole process to run the event. So the way it works now is that groups have to submit their resources to the advantage of sales tab, follow a similar rubric, so I'll talk to you about that later, and you can have that in the chain as well. Then these groups, and then what happens, they're going to be so there's this task force, two members of the task force are going to be meeting with the group that they're going to be plan, so they'll sit down with them, and they'll kind of walk with them, and they'll talk about it, and the members of the task force will say, hey, you want to change this or this, give them feedback, give them comments. Then if that organization has submitted it, has the opportunity to either change their list and then resubmit it, or change their list and submit it as an already. So that gives them the opportunity to talk about it, and then afterwards, then once it's been resubmitted, the mishap will just go on to approval. We really hope to improve everything. It's just an idea just to have a process of dialogue and going on the approval again.
Great. So this is going to come tomorrow, and there's literally a minute left in the meeting.
Make sure to please use this for any information that you want to
Did you?
Yeah, I'm not going to be meeting tomorrow, so I have two questions that I think are relatively important to purposes. First, given that there was already some struggle with the DIP process this year, why does the CD now have the capability to handle that for AMD?
You have to use the mic.
Oh, sorry. Alright, two questions. First, given that the CD was already kind of struggling with the DIP process, as you have noted some of the issues and some shortfalls, like what makes you think that the CD all of a sudden can handle all of the things that the organization is doing, maybe it's not necessarily like a commission is created? And then the second, my question is, why is this targeted pipeline actually creating tangible forms of diversity on campus, and why are targeted pipeline strategies actually effective?
You want me to?
Yeah. So, I'm not sure if you were involved with the DIP process.
You were?
I was involved with both my organizations that I represent.
Okay, so you didn't sit on the team. I think the main shortfall of what I was doing was the fact that it was part of the general body and it was not a special group. And that meant that we actually lost members of the team. So there are people who simply have to get the idea that was a pass, we make it more serious. The other major problem that we thought we would be able to deal with was that the written review is locked down. There's a process for all these organizations, right? And most of the time, on the community, people really set up like a few of them, maybe 18 questions or something, and that's a bottleneck. So if you actually have a one-on-one meeting, and you had, you're never going to have more than about 80 members submitting them, because if you meet members of the task force, that's 10 meetings per week per member. This is really not a restriction on the EDM to have, and that's why I think it's going to be a much better way to do it. So the reason that SSD was bogged down, have been corrected, and the new approach is
Well, I'll take that one because the other portion to tie on to that was we were actually given pretty clear instructions by the UDOs when we were going through this GIT process. Like one, in terms of feedback, it all had to be constructive because it's the first year. So that way they were very adamant about that. The written thing actually just didn't work out. But the dips are important because we need, in the same way as appropriations, we kind of need that contract type, not contract, but we need something to go back on. In terms of target pipeline, what you're referencing is the first part when we're talking about composition, which is strictly word for word from Toward a Destination. It's not something that just came out of our head. It is part of the composition principle, and it does not mean, as some people seem to have taken it, as I noted from the comments, it does not mean go out and find 10 black people to show up at your meeting. What it means is you need to look beyond cases, examine the demographics, which is something that is in Appendix B now, but for outdoor advocacy, for instance, which is one of their items that they put in one of their dips anyway, was examine your demographics, particularly if you're serving a bunch of graduate students, or if you're serving only arts and sciences as opposed to AAP. Look at that and see who else you can invite to come in. That's what that means. It's not a quota system as it's being framed. That's not what it is.
As this is sort of broader issue with target pipelines, with metrics, with trying to make it a quantitative process, and it's inherently not a quantitative process. You can't quantify diversity. You can't say, just looking at conference, you can't say that, using this method or something will attract, how do you measure that? If you say, two new black people in the club, is that, what does that do? Is that impact diversity?
Great. It's been moved to adjourn. It's been seconded. Seeing no dissent, and we're over time. Meeting's adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.